Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're talking around the economics of savings. This is Savings Month, and we had a show around savings and the state of savings earlier on in the month. And for today, to sort of continue with that conversation, we are joined by Kevin Lings, who is the chief economist at StanLib, to sort of give us some highlights around what's actually going in the savings industry, the market, and what it actually means for the economy. As they say, the sudden and dramatic impact of the global COVID-19 pandemic has actually highlighted how unprepared South Africans are for the unforeseen financial shocks. Left without a steady income flow, many have had to actually dip into long-term savings to fund day-to-day expenses, and will no doubt affect longer-term savings plans. That lack of precautionary savings, and it actually buffers the actual absorption of unexpected financial shocks for households, businesses, and governments, which is actually forcing South Africans to review both their future savings and consumption habits, once again shining the light on the importance of precautionary savings. Kevin, greetings to you. I think on a starting point for our listeners, could you give us just some insights into what the actual importance is of savings to a country's economy? Because I think most of the time when we think of savings, we think about the money that you and I perhaps have stored away at the end of the month after all expenses, and the money we don't spend. But on a broader scale, on a macro scale, what is the actual importance of savings?
I'm a doer, yes. If you add up all of those savings that we squirrel away at a household level, you get to what is considered the national savings. So putting everybody's savings together, whether that is from business, households, government, you can calculate what is the total savings of the country. And in South Africa's case, unfortunately, it has fallen below 15% of GDP, in other words, 15% of the size of the economy. To put that in context, the global average sits at 25%. So it's telling us that South Africa, in total, when we add up everybody's savings, is incredibly low, both by our own standards and by historicals, by global standards. So there was a time, if you go back to the 1980s, when South Africa was saving around 25% of GDP, so the savings was a lot higher. But over time, consumerism has crept into South Africa. The desire to own goods, the desire to own brands, the availability of credit, all of those things, and we tended to then deplete our savings. So today we sit at close to the lowest savings we've ever had as a country, and so, as I said, very low by international standards. And we'll talk about what that means at an individual level. And I think you're right. Most people see savings as a household activity. In other words, do I have enough money put away for my retirement? Or perhaps do I have enough money to go on holiday? Something like that. But at a country level, at a national level, it matters hugely, because if you want to fund the expansion of your economy, you want to fund infrastructure, you want to build another factory, you want to build an airport, you want to start a new airline, you want to do anything like that, you need obviously savings in order to undertake that type of investment. And if you have already a very low level of savings, then trying to develop your infrastructure becomes a lot more problematic. And South Africa finds itself in exactly that position. Right now, we're desperate to invest in this country. We're desperate for more infrastructure. There's no doubt we have to create jobs, all of those things. But in order to do that, we need to find a way to fund it. And with a savings level of less than 15% of GDP, that becomes extremely challenging. In South Africa's case, we do get some foreign investment, and obviously the more foreign investment we have, the more that can supplement our own domestic savings and therefore allow us to expand the economy a bit more. But it's still not enough. And at this stage, foreigners are unfortunately starting to rethink their investments in South Africa, particularly in terms of bonds and equities and other investments, because obviously the country's been struggling. We've lost international credit rating. We've been excluded from the global bond investment index. So foreigners are having a rethink about whether they want to put money in South Africa. South Africans don't have enough savings, which means overall it's very challenging when it comes to how do we finance ourselves, how do we finance infrastructure. So we can come up with the best plans in the world. We can say that we want to develop water or roads or more electricity, but ultimately funding or the availability of savings can be a big inhibiting factor.
One of the things that has actually been highlighted quite a bit on this platform, you know, just talking to economists such as yourself, is the lack of, you know, readily available economic data at the moment, especially given, you know, the crisis. It made certain things harder to measure. So in you guys coming up with your savings report, what type of sources did you find that to be an issue? You know, whatever data you've traditionally relied on, were you able to get your hands on that? Or did you have to turn to perhaps different sources to gauge what things are looking like at the moment? And as a follow-up, you were talking about the fact that savings have actually dipped below that 15% of GDP level. What is the actual quantum of that?
Sure. So obviously you're right. Data has become a bit problematic in the last couple of months. Many of the data releases that would come out by Statistics South Africa, those unfortunately have been delayed. And so we only now starting to get a sense of what was happening to, say, the April data when we were in the worst of the lockdown and therefore the economy was under the most amount of pressure. So, and even there, it's a bit delayed. So no doubt, the lack of information does cloud the situation, does make it more problematic. With some areas of savings, the information is more readily available. So the asset management industry does produce data on a very regular basis, certainly on a monthly basis, and that data would be well up to date. So we're able to gauge what is happening to money flowing into asset managers, money flowing into pension funds, into unit trusts. That continues on pretty much unaffected. We also know what's happening to deposits at banks. They report information to the Reserve Bank on a monthly basis. And that data is also pretty much unaffected by COVID-19. The banks continue to report that. So we've got that bit of information reasonably up to date. But then there would be other areas where clearly we don't have, and there would be some gaps. So what we've done with it is we've relied heavily on the data that was leading up to COVID-19 as the main source of our information for the report. And so the number I'm referring to where savings is below 15% of GDP, that was before COVID-19. And there's no doubt that COVID-19 is going to have pushed that savings level quite a bit lower because either people had to draw on their savings in order to simply deal with monthly expenses, or they've lost their job and therefore they're not able to contribute anything to savings. So I've got no doubt that the data we're speaking about unfortunately has got worse. But I think it's the current selection of data when it comes to savings is reflective enough of the situation we find ourselves in. In terms of the savings pattern, 15% of GDP, that's more or less 750 billion rand. So that gives you some idea of how much savings there is in the country. And when you say a number of 750 billion, that sounds great. It sounds like, wow, there's quite a bit of money. But you've got to look at it in terms of, so how much money would we need in order to be prosperous? And our argument is double that. You would ideally, what would be their ideal number? According to the National Development Plan, Trevor Manuel got involved in that, and it hasn't changed much since then. You would want this number to be double that, 30% of GDP. And so right now we have quite a big shortfall relative to where we ideally need to be. And it's also very clear that at the moment we're not, that 750 billion that we do have is not enough to simply maintain the existing capital stock, the existing base of machinery, equipment, electricity supply, water supply. We just don't have enough money to even maintain the existing infrastructure or the existing base of capital stock. So this economy is already under pressure with a savings level of 15% of GDP.
In terms of actually putting together this report and, you know, the research that you've done and, you know, your particular vantage point, having looked at these things for quite some time now, what actually stands out to you? Like, what are some of the things that perhaps actually surprised you? Because the fact that things are on the decline is, you know, at the moment, it's one of those things that's sort of to be expected. But just as someone who's been at this for a long time, how do you see some of the data points that you were seeing? What stood out to you?
Yeah, so I'd agree. I mean, the fact that savings is under pressure, that's been the case for many decades in this country. I don't think that's anything new. We constantly have savings months, and we don't seem to be able to change the savings behavior. So I'm certainly not surprised by the fact that the savings level is fairly low. The fact that most of the savings that we do have sits in the hands of the corporate sector, that's been the case for some time. The fact that government is a net dissaver, we've known that for a considerable time. Obviously, government's finances have become a lot worse because of COVID-19, but most governments around the world don't save money. They are effectively dissavers. Perhaps the thing that I think stands out the most, that I think is not well understood in this country, is the difference between contractual savings and discretionary savings. Contractual savings refers to where somebody's putting money into, say, a pension fund or a unit trust, where there's some sort of ongoing obligation by that person to contribute. So if you think you work for a business, that business takes money off your salary, puts that money into a pension fund, maybe they top up a bit themselves, that is considered a contractual saving. And when you look at that element of savings in isolation, it is very high. It's a standout feature of this country that by global standards, and especially by emerging market standards, South Africa has a very high level of contractual savings. And because of that high level, the growth in pension funds, the growth in unit trusts in particular, that's allowed for the existence of a fairly substantial and vibrant asset management industry. There are a number of asset managers around the country. They manage quite a big pool of funds, and they're able to do reasonably well out of that. That is because of the existence of contractual savings. On the opposite side, there's something called discretionary savings. And unfortunately, that we are dreadful at. What is discretionary savings? That is essentially where you just have money in your bank account, where perhaps you have a little bit of money during the month in your bank account, but you also may have a credit card, you may have an overdraft, you may have other some sort of personal loan. When we look at that on a net basis, it turns out that that number is substantially negative. And what that leads to is a conclusion that tells us that in terms of short-term, immediately available money, South Africa has a difficulty across the board. So when something like COVID-19 hits and we go into a lockdown and some people lose their jobs and we come under more pressure in terms of small business, etc., we have very little money to draw on that is immediately and instantly available. People may have some money in a pension fund. They may have money in a retirement fund. They may have a unit trust. But that money is firstly not meant for daily consumption, and secondly, may not be immediately available. You don't want to find yourself resigning from your job in order to access your pension fund or canceling a long-term retirement policy to get some money to pay for food this month. And so what stands out in this report is this absolute neglect of what's called precautionary savings. Having some, even just a small pool of money that you have available should you get into difficulty. And obviously we're focusing on COVID-19 because that's the immediate difficulty. But quite frankly, that difficulty can manifest in various ways. It can be a severe recession that immediately hits. It can be, for some countries, it's an earthquake or a hurricane disaster, some natural disaster, flood. Those would do the same sorts of things where suddenly you aren't able to earn income the way you used to. And for a number of months, you need some sort of top up. And if you've got precautionary savings or emergency savings or a small pool of money, then you can at least take that anxiety off the table. Unfortunately, we think that not only have you got the anxiety of the infection and potentially catching the infection and the health issue and all of those, and then you've got the anxiety of lockdown on top of that, you've also got a money anxiety because suddenly you can't earn your normal income. And so to me, what stood out in this report is this neglect of precautionary savings.
So precautionary savings is a big message coming from Kevin on that. Kevin, just sort of as an ending point for this discussion, what's your outlook? Firstly, in terms of savings, we've already spoken about the fact that the current crisis is likely going to bring the level of saving even further down than where it is. But, you know, where do you see that going, I guess, in the next, you know, perhaps the year, next year or two? And in turn, you know, because, you know, all of these things are symbiotic, where do you sort of see the economy going?
Sure. So I think that's the critical question is what's next? Obviously, we know in the short term, the situation has got worse. We still, as you say, waiting for data, but we know it has got worse. And certainly the savings level undoubtedly this year will look worse. I think that is appreciated. But what I think has also come out of this is that there has been much more awareness and focus, and the Minister of Finance has highlighted that we've got to make changes to how we spend money at a government level. We've got to make changes as to how we invest in this country, trying to divert more money into critical infrastructure. We've got to do more in terms of some structural reforms, boost some confidence in South Africa. So I think there is awareness of some of the challenges, and certainly I think the Minister of Finance has done well in articulating that. And so South Africa is heading to a point where if we want this country to be more successful, and I believe most people do, then we're going to have to make some critical changes. And those changes are going to have to be firstly at a government level to try and spend the money better and spend less money, and certainly be more mindful of wasteful expenditure or frivolous expenditure, first thing. Second thing is we have to try and ensure that whatever savings we do have, that we spend that money as effectively as possible. Which means we've got to consider, is this infrastructure project, is whatever we're looking to do, is it worthwhile? Is it the best use of that money? When you have only a certain amount of money, a scarcity of capital, then you've got to make sure that whatever capital you deploy is used wisely. And then the third thing I'm hoping is that over time, we learn lessons from COVID-19 and that we start to take more care of our household savings. So I'm optimistic that we'll start to move this country into better shape during the course of next year. I've got no doubt that it's going to be a long and difficult road. I don't think you can turn around the damage that has been done very quickly. But I do think that we'll start to get better growth in South Africa by the end of this year. I think we'll get a turnaround in SA economy, probably approaching 3% next year. And I do think that the government in its current format is determined to try and get infrastructure deployed, to partner with the private sector, which I think the private sector is more than willing to do, and to try and see if they can lift the growth rate more meaningfully. So I think there's a long road ahead for everyone. I think it's a lot of work required. But I think if the good thing to take out of this crisis is that it has highlighted the shortfalls, and it has also highlighted the changes that need to be implemented in order to make South Africa more successful. So hopefully we learn from the crisis.
So hopefully we learn from the crisis. Those are the words of Kevin Lings, who is the chief economist at asset manager Stanlib, just giving us some highlights of the new savings report that they have actually released today, talking about the fact that household savings are down in the country, made worse by the current COVID-19 crisis, but also just highlighting the fact that despite what's going on right now, it's emblematic of an issue that has sort of taken hold in the South African economy over the last 4 decades or so, driven in part by rising consumerism and the fact that people are spending more on goods and actually just saving less. And all of this has been made worse by the current crisis. He's an advocate of the fact that, precautionary savings are a good way to sort of have a buffer against such crises. Have yourself maybe 3 months of living expenses on hand, and then from there you can also just make sure that you are saving for other things such as a retirement.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
The discussion with Kevin, for me, highlights one of the key things about an economy, whether you're looking at it from a micro or macro level, that the micro feeds into the macro and the macro affects the micro, because in the first instance, when you think about the importance of savings, we often look at this thing as being an individual thing, but it's something that on a national level, it's a collective of each individual person's savings that leads to the national savings, that actually leads to the potential of money that's actually going to be used to invest in an economy. Because when you actually think about it, right, all of our individual savings, are put into banks or other financial institutions, and then that money is what is actually drawn on to actually invest in the country, whether we're talking infrastructure projects, whether we're talking about private companies borrowing money from banks, who in essence are taking our money and lending it out at an interest rate or the cost of money to actually develop an economy. That's when you actually see what the importance of savings is beyond just the individual level of the individual business level, what in economics we call the micro level. There is a bit that is the biggest contributor, to the national, to the national pool of funds that's actually used, for investments to actually grow and invest. So this issue of savings turning South Africa into a country of savers as opposed to spenders is very important. And in tandem, you then have to think about issues of, the interest rates, issues of inflation, because you can't save money if it's actually going to be worth less in future than what it is now. So as a combination, that's why I said this is a key element, because there are other elements that then come into the impetus to this, the incentive to actually save. But just underlining the fact that savings is very important, and I think before we even go anywhere, just listening to some of the more prudent and practical advice around having three months of expenses and stuff like that on hand is very good advice. Because if you think about it, right, just before the lockdown went into effect, if you lost your job or lost your income or something, you can't trade, you can't, whatever it is, if you had like what Kevin is talking about, if you had the 3 months of expenses on hand, it would have given you some leeway to actually make a plan as to how you're going to rejig your life or reconfigure going forward. That would have given you money for April, May, and June. And it would only have been perhaps July that you now start thinking about, where am I going next? So it sounds good, I guess, in theory. I do appreciate the fact that some of these issues sound better in theory, but there are other issues that just come into effect. The cost of living is high at the moment. Incomes, for a lot of people are coming down. Disposable incomes, in particular, are coming down. And at the same time, they just unexpected things that happen outside of COVID-19. So it's a very good conversation for us to continue having. But at the end of the day, as long as we are all doing our parts to make sure that we save for ourselves and our families, then the country as a whole is going to be in a much better place. So that's been it in terms of this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Liwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.